This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. We are back. You're listening to me, Charlie Hawkins. Delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine. The squad is looking strong. The first team is strong, as is Newcastle's at the minute. I'm beating in three games, two games, back-to-back wins. No game on the weekend. It was international break, but we will be looking at that game against Villa on Monday night. Newcastle have to wait that little bit longer for the return of Premier League action, and it is Steve Bruce's return back to Villa Park. Villa fans, let me tell you, they said they won't give him a good reception. We can talk about that. Is he getting a good reception from anyone anyway? So something definitely for us to chew over. Obviously, Rafa linked to West Ham. Xhaka maybe to Newcastle from Arsenal. Delighted to say as well, Thomas Concannon from the Football Supporters Association will be joining us at 7:15 to stay around from that one. And Johnny Gold from the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. It's a night of all supporters, Association Supporters Trust. Sean Wade got re-elected somehow to the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. We're taking over the show, but you can take it over. Please help us. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Let's start though. Obviously, it was the international break. Obviously, a few players away on international duty. What have you heard from the club in that time, Sean? Any sound bites? Any players going off, getting injured, coming back not as fit as they once were? Chronic fatigue once again setting in?
No, I think everyone that's been away has come back sort of safe and fit. Miggy was away, he didn't get any goals again, so...
Did he get one?
Sorry, missed that though.
Bulgaria.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did that go then?
I should have asked Ketch. Right, let me start again. It was the international break this weekend. Newcastle were representing their nations. Ketch, how did the players get on? Correct me if I'm wrong, Almiron got one, didn't he? Got on the score sheet.
Well, he absolutely did, Charlie, yeah. I mean, we're trying to get the lads' confidence up here, and Sean's taking his goals gone. Off him.
I thought he didn't score. Sorry, I take that back, Miggy.
So, yeah, I mean, that will hopefully do wonders to his confidence. It's not exactly a massive scalp, a Bulgarian team, but we'll take it. They sneaked a 1-0 away. So anything really to get the lad going, because the effort is absolutely there. Mm. He just needs a bit of luck and he just needs a bit of composure. And I think, I hope when the goals do come, it opens the floodgates for him. Answer maximum.
Yeah, because it's definitely a story at the minute. They're talking about it on Match of the Day. The pundits are talking about it. We're talking about it. It's become a thing. When will he score? Well, he did score for his country, Aaron. You know, maybe this is the spark to galvanise him. You know, the floodgates will open for the Black and White Army.
I mean, I would say yes, but we had this exact conversation when he scored for Paraguay last time, and everyone was like, oh, there you go. He scored on international duty. He's going to do it for the club, and it just seems like he's cursed. So, I mean, yeah, look, fingers crossed, it's always a positive that he's going away with his country and he's scoring, but, I mean, I think until he does it in the black and white, there's going to be a lot of fans that just are going to assume that it's never going to happen. Same as Saint-Maximin, but as Ketch has said, like, his effort's been spot on. He's been so close on so many occasions, hitting the woodwork and hit the bar and hitting his own player at times, you know, when it was going in. So he can't really do much more. So fingers crossed, you know. It was a well-taken goal, you know, outside the box. He's hit it well. So, yeah, fingers crossed he's just got that. He can obviously now replicate it when he comes back.
The Benny Hill of shots, rebounded shots, woodworks, Newcastle players stopping him from scoring themselves, everything but a goal. I've mentioned floodgates then. Do you reckon that is all it's going to take, Sean? You know, he gets this one and we could see him lighting it up. We know this solid foundation Newcastle have at the back, and we've mentioned going forward that, you know, we spoke about it on last week's show. The potential of this team is a lot better than maybe everyone thought.
Yeah, I mean, going forward, the three of them are looking good, they're looking strong, so the defence, as we know, is good. As I catch said before, though, it's just that little bit of luck, you know. He's done everything, bar hit the back of the net, so it has to happen for him. As long as he just keeps up his work rate, it's going to happen, you know, so who knows, you know, it could happen against Villa on Monday.
It very well could. Well, obviously, it was international break, and news is sometimes a little bit thin on the ground, but the big news, and it does concern Newcastle in a Premier League sense, performance. Obviously, yesterday, Tottenham Hotspur firing their manager, Maurizio Pochettino, after 5 years in charge of the club, 6 months after reaching that European Cup final. I know it's not Newcastle, but we're talking about managerial merry-go-round, Kitch, the managerial hot seat. Was you surprised that Poch, second manager this season in the Premier League, to get fired?
Massively, yeah. I think it's very harsh on him, considering where he's taken them from and to. But it's Daniel Levy's power move, and it's absolutely fascinating now because it just opens up this big game of chess. There's a really top manager there available. There's Bayern Munich who need someone. There's Man United whose manager isn't exactly firing on all cylinders. And all of a sudden, you know, you start to look at the poker game of managers, and it becomes very, very interesting. Personally, I think Tottenham, they should have kicked on from the Champions League final. That was a huge moment for that club. They should have had a huge summer. I think they needed a big clear out. I think there's players there who clearly don't want to be there. Danny Rose has tried to leave for the last three transfer windows. The whole back line, really, Lloris, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Rose, Davies, those, they
Ericsson
can all go.
Wants to Ericsson, go, yeah.
I would have had a big clear out, back Poch to clear out, get some new blood in and go again, go up another level and use the Champions League final as a springboard to the next level. But they haven't done that. And what will probably happen is now Mourinho will probably get money. Levy will learn from his mistake because Tottenham aren't short of money. And if it doesn't go well with Mourinho and money, that'll frustrate the Tottenham fans because they'll say, why didn't Poch get that?
Yeah, because they're saying that he won't get the money. Do you believe he will get? And Mourinho back in the Premier League, Aaron, are you pleased about it just from that neutral standpoint?
From a neutral sport fan, I am. You know, I'm a big fan of Mourinho because I think purely, especially as a journalist, because he is box office. Do you know what I mean? The league is so much better for him, you know, in terms of, you know, the entertainment value. Whether he'll get money or not, I think, obviously, Levy's very, very clever with his money. He doesn't want to spend a lot of money. I mean, a net spend of 31 million, I think, for Poch in the last couple of seasons. Not a lot when you think he's been delivering Champions League football. But I think Jose Mourinho's waited so long to get back into management and he's had so many opportunities to go to different leagues. I can't see him agreeing to go to Spurs unless Daniel Levy has said, categorically, I will let you spend. Because I think Mourinho could have went anywhere in the world. He could have went to the Bundesliga or China or, you know, there's even talk of Arsenal who probably would have backed him. So I think he will get money purely because I think that will be the big thing that's made him join Tottenham.
And why I bring this up, that because of the managerial merry-go-round, Sean, you know, we mentioned that the names that we think are going to be on there, Steve Bruce and others, and it never falls that way, you know. It's always one that maybe you weren't suspecting, and it was Poch. What did you make of it? And, you know, and where's Steve Bruce's hot seat? Has it got a little bit colder with this small run of form?
Well, with regards to sort of Pochettino, I think it was a surprise sort of thing, you know, but then looking back over these 5 years, he hasn't actually won anything for Tottenham, and I think that's where the frustrations are coming from. Yes, he's getting to finals and they've done well throughout sort of competition, but he hasn't actually getting them over the finish line, and the setup really now with the new stadium to be a massive player in the game, you know, so they've done everything but. So I can understand why, in a sense, that they've wanted to get rid of him, and it's been purely based on he's brought no silverware, and someone like Mourinho, who, let's face it, won everything that is in cup competitions, you know, he's possibly that person that can take them. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I like Mourinho. He started off life under Bobby Robson, you know, and he was always a great admirer of Bobby Robson. And also, we've got possibly 6 points to look forward to from Tottenham now, because Mourinho's never ever won at St James's. So, and Tottenham's got a pretty bad run at St James's. So, yeah, it could be 6 points in the bag. So, I'm looking forward to
it. It is something that when Arsenal were relevant a very long time ago, you've really got to draw your memory back for that. But when Arsenal were relevant in the title run, we always used to be thankful for Newcastle beating Chelsea at St James's Park. So, thank you for that. But why I talk about this managerial merry-go-round, Aaron, is obviously another name this linked, and he dominates this show and he's loved on this show, Rafa being linked with a West Ham job. Mm-hmm. What did you make of that? Was that left field for you? Were you surprised? Is there a point in time when you think this could actually happen?
I think before Rafa calls time in his career, he probably will have a spell at West Ham. They have chased him for so long. They wanted him before we got him, they wanted him when we had him, and they probably wanted him in the summer as well when we knew that we weren't keeping him. They were probably hoping that he didn't go anywhere else, purely so that they had him if they wanted him. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they do want him. And I think, if I'm being honest, it is probably it's probably a partnership that will work both ways. Benitez wants to be in England, he wants to be close to his family, he wants to be in the Premier League, and he also wants a long-term project, which West Ham would be. If he can be the manager that finally takes over and finally gets them into the top six, which so many others have promised, you know, Bilic, Pellegrini, and they never succeeded, I think it works. And I think with West Ham, what he didn't get with Newcastle will be backing, not just from the fans, but from the board. You know, West Ham aren't shy of spending money. They aren't like Mike Ashley. They will probably buy the players that Rafa wants. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he did go to them in the near future.
Well, if he does go in the near future, how would you feel about that, Ketch? Is that a dagger to the heart?
It would be a bit of a tough one. Personally, I don't think he'll go to West Ham.
No, I don't.
I think he could have gone to West Ham prior to Pellegrini. I believe there was quite a high-level conversation about that, and I think it was deemed not a goer. So I really don't see it. Knowing Sullivan and Gold have probably put a call into Pochettino this week, trying to get someone bigger in. But I think, why would Rafa go to West Ham? I think he can do better than that, and I've heard that he's monitoring the Arsenal situation.
Really?
And the way that he's set up, I think it's brilliant the way he's gone to China, and he's obviously on the huge contract. He's just on ice until a big job comes along. Their season over there runs March to December. I just think the Arsenal situation would seriously interest Rafa, and I think that would be a much better fit, and I think Arsenal could do a lot worse than Rafa.
Very interesting. The managerial merry-go-round. Rafa at Arsenal, West Ham want him. Newcastle wanted him to stay. Poch leaving Spurs. Mourinho back in madness, but we are keeping it on Newcastle. And obviously, last week we didn't really touch upon it, but now confirmed out to the new year. Lascelles is out injured. Started every game this term. How big a blow is this, Aaron, for the Newcastle team?
I mean, in a sense, it's obviously a blow. He's the captain.
Oh, Steve Bruce has texted me. No, he's on for a little bit longer. That's a yellow card in the studio. I won't announce who it is. We'll let VAR decide. Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a blow for Lascelles. You know, he's the captain. He's the leader. But I think at any other time, then it would be a massive blow. But as we've touched on in the last couple of weeks, Newcastle's defence at the minute is so strong in numbers that Lascelles' absence, even though obviously you'll lose that little bit of fire and the sort of leadership at the back, you won't lose any quality. You know, Cher and Lejeune is coming back, and Dummett can step back in, and Fernandez is playing well, and Clark's playing well. So any other time of my sort of time supporting Newcastle, I'd be worried when the central defender captain leaves. But at the minute we're so well stocked at the back, then it's sort of... It's not a big deal as it could have been, really.
Yeah, it is truly not unbelievable, but how the wealth of options Newcastle have. We talked about this solid foundation, Sean, you know, the defenders they have. That, you know, they really are in a good position there at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah, and thankfully so. It's just, you know, we haven't really been in this position before where we could look at our back four and with our goalkeeper and feel sort of confident. We've always kind of had... kind of someone that's like hasn't had the boots on the right feet or something, you know, like within the defence. And it's just so we've always had that kind of that hole, you know, where we could be penetrated in a sense, you know, by other teams. And thankfully, so we've got that bit of reassurance, which we've never had in such a long time. I can't remember when we could actually look at the defence and say, yeah, that's actually strong. So, like, normally, I think, even if it had been a couple of seasons ago, if Lascelles was out, even kind of maybe even sort of a season and a half ago, we would have been like, oh no, he's out. And but actually it's a case of, well, no, we've got the strength there in any case in numbers, hopefully to go on.
Well, they do have the strength in numbers at the minute, but for how long is that? Because obviously 14 player contracts set to expire at the end of the season for Newcastle. That is a really big developing story. We're going to be talking about that, but delighted to say Thomas Concannon from the Football Supporters Association is with us next.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine. We were just talking about the international break, the managerial merry-go-round. We're going to be looking at those player contracts a little bit later and previewing the Monday night game with Villa. But delighted to say now, joining us on the line, Thomas Concannon from the Football Supporters Association, a board member at Newcastle United Supporters Trust and War Flags. Thomas, just literally fingers in all pies, absolutely delighted to have you on. Let's kick it off with the Monday night games. There's been many for Newcastle, but they haven't had a home one since 2012. Is that right?
That's right, mate. Yeah, December 2012 was the last time we had a home game in the Premier League on a Monday night, yeah. We've had 14 away since.
Who's worked that out? I know it's still also it's done by a computer, but 14 away games for a Monday night. I mean, not that, that we can say fair and unfair disadvantage, but surely there's been a mistake here.
It's an incredible amount. We've never really had a true explanation as to why. We have heard that the club prefer to play away midweek rather than home from a financial point of view. However, it's not fair on the fans. Quite simply, that's 14 trips away from home that the fans have had to take time off work, potentially book hotels. You know, we're at a huge geographical disadvantage anyway, which therefore puts us at a financial disadvantage compared to the rest of the league. So it's something that we need answers to.
Sean, I thought that catch was going in first of a question. The other thing I wanted to ask about with the FSE, what is there anything that they can propose to try to have changes made with fixtures? I know, like, sort of looking into Newcastle, I was just looking into February, and I'm sure we've got Arsenal, we've got Palace, and then we've got Southampton. These are all away games. So again, it's just like some of the fixtures that are thrown up for it just seem absolutely ridiculous, you know. Is there anything that can be done going forward to change fixtures so that they're a bit more kind to everyone concerned?
I think from the FSA's point of view, it's a difficult one to just look at Newcastle's case and fight on behalf of Newcastle. It would need to be a widespread problem, which is totally understandable. I think from our point of view, we just need to see an even spread of these games. Mm-hmm. You know, a fairer amount or should be played at home. We've had 29 midweek away games since 2012-2013, which is the most for Man City. Which, when you look at Man City, they've had 33. But the amount that, you know, Man City, they like to compete in cup competitions. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're likely to get more rearranged games. And the fact that we've had one game one season outside of the Premier League in that time, to have the most away games midweek in comparison to Man United, Tottenham, or Liverpool, Chelsea, is quite staggering, and there's quite clearly a reason for it, and we don't know why. From the FSA's point of view, they're looking at more ways to make things easier for travelling fans, that when these games are moved for TV, mm-hmm. that there are plans in place to prevent fans having to fork out much more money, especially from Newcastle's point of view, train tickets, for example. You know, having to wait 6 weeks till before the game to find out when the game is, when the train tickets have already been on sale for so long, you know, that we need a train ticket that matches the game, not the date. That's something that the FSA is working on, and hopefully will come to the fruition.
Excellent.
Thomas, it's Ketch here. Just on this Monday night midweek situation, I think, is it right we could probably take it as a bit of a compliment that Sky want and BT want to put us on TV all the time, because they're going to get a big number of viewers watching it, and it's a bit of a it's not awful, but it's like a geographical issue. Obviously, our stadium is miles away from majority. We travel the most every year, so mm-hmm. Sky want to put us on TV because they're going to get big viewership, but we have to travel the most, so it's a bit of a vicious circle. Is that fair to say?
I think that is fair to say, yeah, and especially given our fans still travel in good numbers anyway. I think we've sold out for Monday night. I'm not sure what the number is, but yeah, we've sold out for Monday night, which is obviously a great thing. However, it has impacted on previous games that have been selected for midweek. I know we've travelled to Everton at times a few times midweek. We've had Everton. I think I've been Everton more times midweek than what I have on a Saturday.
And no one wants that.
No one wants to go to Everton anyway. But it's one of those that we've taken about 800 fans, which is unheard of for Newcastle. We always take thousands. But it has impacted on fixtures previously. And if it continues to happen, then who knows? You know, we've got Everton away this season again, midweek. So it'll be interesting to see how many we take there. But it is fair to say that Sky do love putting us on.
On a bit of a more positive note, then, I know you're heavily involved in War Flags for the last couple of seasons. I just wanted to actually say thank you for your efforts, because often Newcastle fans get things wrong. Like we can't organise good protests, and you know, various things don't seem to happen. But the flags, I think, was absolutely something we've got spot on the last two seasons. It's something that the stadium needed at a time when the football wasn't great. I looked at Liverpool now with envy for years at how good their flag displays were on the Kop, and I never thought we'd ever be able to replicate anything near that. But things like the Kevin Keegan quote that appeared the length of the Gallagher end, he is only one man, the famous quote criticised Nash. I thought that was excellent. I thought the newspapers display, where it was like kind of all clippings of newspapers with headlines of famous Newcastle moments, the legends, I thought was really excellent what you did. And I just wondered why, I know there is a reason behind it, but why you've decided not to proceed with that, and is there a potential for you to return and crowdsource to bring more flags back to the ground at some point in the future?
Yeah, it was such a disappointing thing to have to do, to basically pull the displays. It was more a group decision. Personally, I still go, but I think about 85% of the group cancelled their season tickets. Some of them had them for 40 years. So as a group, it was just impossible to continue, really. We wouldn't be able to put in the time and effort with just three or four of us. It would be completely impossible. And it didn't feel right. You know, we put this group together with a lot of people who were cancelling, and that felt wrong to continue and pretend everything was okay, because that was what we tried to do as a group. We tried to put these displays on to put this impression across that everything's fine, that we're supporting the team, etc., etc. But then when we constantly are at loggerheads with the club, it becomes a bit difficult to continue. And I hope in the near future we can return. But that would be more up to the people that have cancelled the season tickets rather than anything I can say right now.
Well, I think every fan hopes that he can return, and not only just on what he's bringing to the matches, but he's also raised a lot of money for the food bank as well. I mean, he's done the biggest so far, and then I think it was somewhere, was it around about £8,000 that you've raised for the food bank by selling the smaller surfer flag?
Yeah, it's just under 5,000, but it's just under 5,000, which is still a remarkable amount.
Yeah.
And as a group, we've raised £50,000 for these displays. So it's difficult to stop. I mean, I was one of the ones that drove to Poland to go and pick it up.
Uh-huh.
The big surfer flag. So it's hard for me, but it's I have to follow the wishes of the rest of the group. It's not something that I can make a decision on. Or, yeah.
Well, I think it's the right decision, like with what you're doing as well. You know, it's like everyone's got to take a stand. You know, when enough is enough. You know, and it's at the end of the day, it seems that the fans aren't appreciated by Mike Ashley and the club for that matter. You know, so I think
it's sad because we had a good relationship with a lot of people who worked in the football club, mm-hmm. and it's nothing against them. You know, and we continue to have a good relationship with them. It was more just the disappointment of what was constantly going on with the hierarchy that made things very difficult for a lot of people to just not continue.
I think Rafa's sort of being sacked or whatever it was, you know, was a final straw for a lot of people. But
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Thomas, you've just touched on there, obviously, you know, the final straw for a lot of people was the board, and obviously not so much, I'm assuming, Steve Bruce. What I was going to ask you was, now that results have sort of picked up in the last couple of weeks and are starting to look a lot better than people thought, have you found people that were initially, you know, dead set on avoiding coming back, or is it still a case of, despite the results and how, you know, sort of surprising Bruce has, you know, managed to find himself the last couple of weeks, is it still a case that people are staying away?
Personally, yes. I think people are staying away still. I don't know anyone that has come back on the back of the last couple of results or the last few results, which have also been very good, which is great to see. But I think these people, it's at the stage now where a few results aren't going to turn people. It's not going to turn their heads quite yet. It'll be a long time yet.
Well, Thomas, you mentioned those Monday night games, no home one since 2012. It is Villa on Monday night. Steve Bruce returning to Villa Park. What is your score prediction?
1-0 Villa.
Thomas, I wouldn't have asked otherwise. I just thought I teed you up nicely for that one.
I do apologise. I'm quite a pessimistic fan.
Yeah, don't be silly. We won't be asking you back. No, we really appreciate that, Thomas. Really good to have you on. Just kidding there. Honestly, real insight from you there. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas Concannon there from the Football Supporters Association, the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, and obviously War Flags, just a man with many talents. Real pleasure to have him on. But we will be looking at that Aston Villa game and talking about the 14 player contracts set to expire at the end of next season.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Ketch from Match of the Day magazine. Well, delighted we just had Thomas Concannon on there from the Football Supporters Association telling us why he feels Newcastle haven't had the best of treatment. No home Monday night game since 2012. 14 straight on the bounce away. Something not happy there, especially for the fans. The fans are always the last to be thought of. We were talking about the international break, how the players have fared there. But let's talk about Newcastle's own players, because Aaron, 14 player contracts to expire the end of next season. Not a worry, maybe. Well, it is a worry now, but not the biggest concern. But it can get bigger and bigger, can't it, this problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not going to lie, it's not something I've worried about as of yet. You know, I wasn't even aware that the number was so high. But as you say, you know, especially we know the way this club has run, that it's not run in an orderly fashion, and it could get to a point where we are starting to panic. I've just looked there at some of the contracts that are expiring, not this summer coming, but the next one. And Shelvey, Gale, Richie and Hayden are all out of contract. Now, these are four players that have all been massively linked with moves away. You know, Shelvey's been linked with a move back to London. Richie's nearly left twice. Hayden somehow stayed in the summer when he should have. And Gale has obviously been linked with a lot of championship clubs. So just the four of them alone, it's going to get to a stage where if their contract isn't renewed by next summer, it's do we now flog them to get some money, or do we have to just let their contract run down, you know, into 2021? So if the club don't, you know, start to address this problem soon, then we are probably going to be looking at next summer panicking as to how many we're going to lose on a free potentially.
It's something I think the club should have looked at in the summer, because the situation they've got now is a number of those players have played themselves into a leveraging position where they're going to demand massive deals on top of what they're already on. So, for example, Federico Fernandez, Sean Longstaff, Yedlin, Hayden, Kieran Clark, Cher, Shelvey, all playing well at the minute. They're all going to point at their performances and go, I need an improved deal here. And we know Mike Ashley likes to do things on the cheap. He's not going to be able to do this on the cheap at all. So I think out of there's actually...
And especially if their contract's expiring, they can get a big free transfer, you know, in wages, the bulk on, because the clubs don't have to spend to sign them.
They're in a massive... Those players' agents are in a massive bargaining position. So Newcastle have stitched themselves up a bit, and they're going to lose out if they want to keep these players, or if they want to take a risk and back their recruitment policy and think, oh, we can replace these. I think that's a bit of a risky strategy, personally. I think there's at least 10 players in there who deserve deals. But whether or not Charnley and Ashley are prepared to pay them what they think they're worth, that is going to be the problem. There's always going to be one who's going to put a ridiculous demand down. And the one I'm kind of worried about is Cher, who could, the age he is and the performances he's put in, he's an international player. There's a Euros around the corner. He's going to be in the shop window massively in the summer. He's the one who's going to be like, well, I need a huge deal here. Otherwise, there's big European clubs who are going to be in for me. And he's quite a key player, and I wouldn't want to lose him. Imagine having to lose him for a low amount of money with 12 months left on his deal. It'd be massively frustrating. So a bit of naivety on the club's behalf, and they've actually got their work cut out now to sort these deals out.
Yeah, massively. Look, it happens at all clubs, but even Aaron's saying they're shocked that the number is so high this season and next season. But it's issues like this, Sean, and you know, it's not just Newcastle. A lot of clubs find themselves in these situations, but it is situations like this that drive that wedge between the board and the club and the way they've handled it, and to you, the supporters.
Definitely, but it's got to be, I mean, look at Sean Longstaff, who's still on his contract that he signed prior to being in the first team. They still haven't even sorted out his new contract.
Matty, yes.
I thought that Sean's contract is something.
Sean signed one in December, but he's already looking for that to be increased because of the Man United interest.
Because it's on it. Because it was on it. But this was done before he had actually broke through into the first team.
Literally the month he broke through, December last year, he got an improved deal. Then he's gone into the first team in January, done what he's done, being attracted the interest of Man United. So Sean had his 4-year deal signed in December, but he's actually now looking for improved terms on beyond that because there's international potential and there's Man United interest. Whereas Matty, the younger Longstaff, I think we should call him Shortstaff and Longstaff. Shortstaff is now an England under 20 international. He's on 800.
Aaron loves it.
He's on 850 quid a week. The lad, so he needs a deal quickly. You know, he deserves more than that. We need to tie him down because in January he can theoretically talk to European clubs. So hopefully, I think that's scary when you say it like that
because you don't even think about that, do you? And you say like European clubs talking from January. I mean, that is that's the Newcastle nightmare, isn't it, Aaron?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like I touched on before, this club is so disorganised from top to bottom that they could just get to the stage where we haven't tied them down, probably over Mike Ashley being, you know, petulant.
But this is Lee Charnley's job, though, as well, wasn't it? That's what he's there to do.
Charnley's record doesn't strike me with any sort of, what's the word? You know, I'm not reassured, but because of Lee Charnley's in charge, do you know what I mean? It's the whole lot of them. They don't have like a footballing brain, you know, they're all about business. So, I mean,
well, it's not a good business brain either.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Letting them go on a free.
People that say Mike Ashley's a good businessman, obviously, is he? But yeah, I mean, to lose Matty Longstaff for pennies to a European club, to lose Fabian Shaw for pennies to a European club would just be, it would be typical Newcastle, but it would be very, you know, very upsetting for fans as well.
I could see Man U coming in for the pair of them, to tell the truth, in January.
Don't say that.
Quite honestly,
Well, it's not just players obviously leaving, 14 players' contracts expiring. Players have already been linked. We know it's a world that's dominated by transfers and social media, and we like to build it up already. It's all year round, let's be honest. One of the names that is linked, Granit Xhaka, obviously, from Arsenal. He's obviously fallen out of favour there. Was the captain, now isn't the captain, been stripped of that. Being linked to Newcastle, obviously got international teammates up at Newcastle. We just spoke of him. Do you believe this rumour, Ketch? How strongly could you see this happening?
Well, the fact it hasn't gone away suggests that Bruce is genuinely interested. The interesting thing from my point of view is I thought we were okay at defensive midfield. We've got two domestic loan spaces, so we haven't got any domestic loans at the minute, so it could happen. He's on 120 grand a week at Arsenal, so he'd need to have at least half that, because Shelby's on around about 60-70 grand, so we would only be able to go up to around about that level. Personally, we're Newcastle fans. We're never going to turn away signings, are we? Anyone to come in and help. And Xhaka is an international player. He's having a bad time at Arsenal. He needs to get away. And, you know, let's get him in alone. You'd have a hungry player who would want to prove people wrong, and I don't think that's ever a bad thing.
Yeah, Xhaka playing in the black and white stripes.
I can't believe that I've actually heard people this week saying they wouldn't take Granit Xhaka. He gets,
really? Yeah. Is that a bit of a consensus then from the Newcastle fans?
I mean, I don't know if it's a general consensus. It's been a sort of small minority, but I think that's purely because they haven't actually watched him, and they just, all they hear is that Arsenal fans don't like him, and you know what I mean? I personally would take him. I think he's very, very underrated. I think he gets a lot of negative abuse that he doesn't deserve. You probably know more than me watching him week in, week out.
Go on, sorry, Aaron, I interrupted you.
But I feel like he's too easily criticised. Yes, he gives away stupid fouls and picks up the odd stupid yellow. But I think in terms of a player, you don't play and captain your country that many times if you don't have something about you. And I think that it's sad to see what's happening with Arsenal. I would love him at Newcastle, but I feel like still we won't get him because there will be bigger clubs that think we've got a chance to get this guy on loan for nothing. Let's definitely do it.
The problem is, I feel, with Xhaka, he's been played out of position. He's not a defensive midfielder. He's an eight. He's box to box. He shouldn't be, you know, he wants to be pushing it forward. He's not someone to be breaking the play up. He needs to be played more advanced. When he has been played more advanced at Arsenal, that is when he's done well. And that's what he does for Switzerland. This is why we paid the big fee for him. Look, you don't get as many caps as you do and represent your country and sign for Arsenal if you're not there. He has fallen out of favour, but some of the stick he's got has also been absolutely horrendous, you know, targeting his family members. That's another story. But, you know, big stories on Newcastle. Players, their contracts expiring, players already linked. You know, we are near to January, that winter transfer window. But let's keep our eyes on the Monday night game, because it is Villa. It is Steve Bruce's return to Villa Park. Ketch, I've done the Aston Villa fan show, And they, I was surprised. They said, look, we're not going to give him a bad reception, but we don't have good memories of him, you know. Not the biggest fan of him. I was a little bit surprised at that. Is that fair, or this doesn't surprise you?
Doesn't surprise me. No, Steve Bruce has managed, what, 10 clubs? I don't think anyone likes him. I don't think anyone's got fond memories of from any of those clubs. I mean, call in, let us know. Am I wrong? I've never met a Wigan fan or a Birmingham City fan or a Crystal Palace fan who has fond memories of Steve Bruce. He was struggling with them at around about mid-table this time last year and got sacked, and Dean Smith came in and all of a sudden propelled them up the league. So there was a squad there capable of getting into the playoffs, of getting into the promotion spots. Steve Bruce couldn't get it out of them, so they were right to part with him. And it kind of follows the theme that he never leaves really on good terms with the fans.
They said he prefers individual talent. He prefers stars rather than a team. He doesn't know how to get the cohesiveness of a team. You know that, and you know the same old label that Steve Bruce gets it with. That he said from the Villa fan show, no tactics, no tactical awareness whatsoever. Which is, I think it's fair to say, Aaron, that's been labelled with him at Newcastle, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think Steve Bruce sort of took offence to that at the start of the season when he started getting results, because he sort of turned around to fans and said, well, you know, everyone's been saying I've got no tactics. Well, look at this. We've just beaten United and we've beaten Spurs and all this. So I do agree with Ketch that not a lot of fans have, you know, great like things to say about him. But one thing I do think is that, especially with Aston Villa, he was very, very unlucky to not get them up. They were 90 minutes away from the Premier League when they lost to Fulham. And if that had happened and they had beaten Fulham and went up, it would be a completely different story, because they wouldn't have had the money problems that they had that summer with their owners. Bruce then obviously wouldn't have had that season where he was just scraping around mid-table. So he could be in a completely different position now. But obviously despite us having quite a good run so far this season, I don't think we're ready to call Steve Bruce a tactical genius yet, which I think is the general consensus.
Well, we know the Newcastle fans aren't really fully on Steve Bruce's side or on his side at all. The Villa fans aren't either. So he's in for a really positive night, Sean.
Sounds good, doesn't it? I just can't understand why he would be defending himself on tactics and stuff when he came out himself, didn't he? And he said that he doesn't believe in tactics.
Did he say that?
Yeah. So it's... I'll Google it. But he's not a great believer in team tactics in any case. So it's just, I don't know, he's a bit of a strange one. But I think Monday night's going to be a strange one for him as well. So at the end of the day, there's no love lost between him and Villa, is there really? So
I think it's hard for Steve Bruce and his last three jobs. You've got to look at when he was at Villa, he left them and they went up. He went to Sheffield Wed and they wanted to keep him and he left. So that was bad terms as well. And then he's came into Newcastle, where we've had a manager before who we wanted. So it's sort of just, I feel like he's been a little bit lucky in that sense. I'm not trying to dig him out here, because I do think, you know, some of the criticism he gets is justified. I just think that sometimes it's easy to just sort of look at it from the outside and not realise. I think he has been quite unlucky. And if things had panned out a slightly bit different, then he wouldn't be in this position that he is in now.
Well, before we invite Johnny Gold on to tell us what he thinks of Villa going forward in this Monday night game, Ketch, what do you think? You know, it's a tough one. You mentioned it earlier. You said Villa need this game. You know, obviously everyone needs to win in the Premier League, but this is massive for them on Monday night.
Yeah, they've lost three games in a row, and I know there was some difficult fixtures in there, Man City away, Liverpool at home, and then they played Wolves away, a bit of a Midlands derby, and they were, by all accounts, terrible. They didn't have Grealish, or he got injured in that game, and then they lost a goal. They lost the goalkeeper.
They lost Heaton, really early doors.
Then they lost Jedstia. Yeah. Then they got the third choice in. Mm. Obviously not helpful. I think this is a game that they will have earmarked as we need to win, and because they've lost the previous three and they're hovering around the relegation zone, the pressure is on them to get the 3 points. Whereas we're coming here with two wins in a row, and I think we were saying, I honestly think a draw would suit both teams, because Villa are beginning to feel under pressure and Newcastle would like to keep the momentum going.
Well, you always want 3 points, but would you take a point now, Ketch?
I think I would, because when I looked at this, November was always a key time. Bruce even said, look, this is when you can really start judging me on these November games, because we had West Ham, Bournemouth, Villa and City. And I think I looked at those four games and I thought, well, 6 points would be good from those, and we've already got the 6 points, so they're in the bag, and anything beyond that is a bonus. So Brucey bonus. So I'll have a point here, and then City at home, we're going to struggle there.
Brucey bonus, catch with all the puns tonight. Short staff, long staff, my favourite. I'm going to dine out on that for a long time. But Aaron, do you agree with Ketch's assessment of the Monday night fixture?
Yeah, 100%. And I think Villa Park's not an easy place to go. And I think we touched on it in the break. I think it's just about keeping this momentum up and making sure that we aren't sort of taking one step forward and two back. You know, the one thing that Bruce has sort of hasn't achieved so far at Newcastle has been consistency until the last couple of games. So I think if we can take a point on then, but you know, before going into Manchester City, then, you know, I would definitely take a point on Monday night.
All right, well, before we get your score prediction, let's hear from the Villa opposition view, because it's time to see what they think going into this game. And Johnny Gold will be joining us next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine. And I'm delighted to say we are now also joined by Johnny Gold from the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. Johnny, really good to have you back on the show and to talk to you tonight. Massive Monday night fixture. Villa in a little bit of a mini slump at the minute and facing Newcastle, who return with Steve Bruce, and they're in a good bit of form at the minute, an upturn in form, let's say. How are you feeling ahead of this contest?
Well, first of all, good evening. I've just been told with 25 seconds notice that this is the Newcastle United show. So I've been properly ambushed here. I didn't realise.
It is. So you be careful what you say.
So I can't go way a man, because you'll probably sort of hang up. But as a peace offering, what I can do is say that my grandmother was born and bred in Newcastle. So that's why I say Newcastle. Ah. Because she had a broad Geordie accent and a little bit of social history. As a young girl, she left with her family from Newcastle, the Great Depression as it was in the 30s. And came to Birmingham because it was the city of 1,000 trades.
Wow.
And that is what the reason why I'm a Brummie and not a Geordie.
So close, but so far.
Yeah, Johnny, you missed.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is you can have Steve Bruce and all.
Well, you said you come on with 25 seconds to spare. Let me tell you, the previous 25 minutes we were talking about the reception he may get, but it's not going to be a good one then, by all accounts.
Well, listen, he left under a bit of a cloud. We missed out on the playoffs, didn't we? In the final at Wembley, which of course Dean Smith achieved 12 months later, losing to Fulham. And of course it might have been a completely different story. And the truth of the matter is, Steve Bruce would have survived that. We would have been in the Premier League. We would have had Tony Shearer as chairman. And probably would be back with Fulham in the Championship now. But actually, as it turned out, missing out on that promotion, Steve Bruce starting last season in the Championship with us and then getting the sack has done us a massive, massive favour. And that's not disrespect to Steve Bruce. It's just the turn of events that which turned out a new ownership, a fantastic new ownership at Aston Villa, a fantastic new manager in Dean Smith, who has really lit up the football club in a way that I'm hoping, I think Newcastle United fans will hope, Steve Bruce can do as a homeboy in Newcastle. But you're right, Newcastle United have surprised a number of people. And they said they'd be rock bottom, they'd have the wooden spoon, they'd be relegated immediately. But look, that's not happened, and they're on a decent run of form. Look, we've played the treble winners and the European champions and then the Wolves. But yes, he's going to get a slightly, let's just say a frictionful return to Villa Park, because he didn't leave us on good terms, frankly. He fell out with the supporters.
Johnny, this is a serious fan show, so I've got a bit of a serious question for you. Has the Aston Villa fan who threw a cabbage at Steve Bruce been tracked down? Because that was out of order.
He's been given the freedom of the city of Birmingham.
And Newcastle.
He's the former Sunderland manager. He's the former Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday manager. He's Aston Villa and Birmingham City manager. The guy has no scruple. He doesn't care. Which is a shame, really, because I remember Brucey before Villa and when he was at Wigan Athletic and even at Birmingham City. He was a liked man. He was a likeable guy at Manchester United. He was, you know, arguably the best defender that ever played for England. Certainly any Englishman under the jurisdiction of Sir Alex Ferguson got an England call-up, not Steve Bruce. And to be fair to Bruce, he's had a fantastic managerial career. He's had non-stop employment. He is supposedly, or not in our case, the championship promotions specialist up there with Neil Warnock. I just wonder from you guys, a quick question. I mean, can you finish fourth bottom? Can you think about staying up this season? I mean, that's a question for us as well.
Yeah, I think the last sort of run of results has kind of given me a little bit more confidence about the season. I mean, going sort of when I heard that Bruce was sort of the man for the job, I really doubted where we would be at the end of the season, and I really thought that relegation was going to be on the cards 100%, to tell the truth. The last few sort of games have given us a lot more optimism, let's say, and I do see we're kind of being safe. I don't think we're going to set the league on fire or anything like that, but I do think that we'll sort of stay in the Premier next season. But like I say, at the same time, I don't see we're setting the world on fire, and that's something that us as fans like sort of desperately want, you know. Yeah. I just don't think, unfortunately, it's never going to happen under Mike Ashley's ownership.
No.
And that is the main problem, you know, for us. We've just got a dreadful owner, really, that doesn't have no ambition for taking the club forward. He seems to cut with dry on everything, you know. One of the questions I wanted to ask, though, is that you've got some challenging matches coming up, to say the least. You've got Man United, who seem to be a bit more in form. You've got Chelsea, and then you're all the way to Leicester, and obviously Newcastle on Monday. So how are you looking at this game? It must be, in Villa's eyes, a must-win game, is it?
Well, especially after three straight defeats. And, of course, we might, if we're being generous to a newly promoted side, think that losing to Manchester City and Liverpool is no disgrace, but we lost to Wolves as well. Okay, we were very unlucky against Liverpool. Dean Smith was right when he said Wolves was our lowest ever in his management since the defeat at Wigan. Manchester City, well, was Manchester City. You know, what can you do up there? Not very much. And we held out for as long as we can. But yes, it has added pressure to what might be perceived to Villa fans at home to be a must-win game, a six-pointer. Now, I had ambitions for us to finish as high as mid-table. And I think even in my greatest optimism, that might now look a little bit chancy. Ooh. So yes, with those games, with United and Chelsea, the games come thick and fast. The learning curve is massive, and yet we have marvellous players who are proving it on the international stage. Mings with England, McGinn with Scotland. We've got a great keeper in Burnley's Tom Heaton now between the sticks for us at Villa Park. You know, we've got a slight problem up front with Wesley not quite hitting the target quite as we'd hoped, and of course we've got the Peaky Blinder lookalike. We've got Jack Grealish.
You certainly have. He's back in the lineup. Johnny, what is your score prediction then for the weekend, quickly?
Oh, 2-1 the Villa.
2-1 the Villa. Wasn't expecting anything else, Johnny. You've not made no friends, but it's always good to hear from you. Johnny Gold there from the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. He's going for a Villa home win, 2-1. We keep hearing it. Kitch, you said it's massive for them. He said potential six-pointer. Newcastle don't see it as that. Let's go round the room. Score prediction, Kitch.
1-1, and I'll take that.
Yeah, 1-1.
I'm going for a surprise 3-0 to Newcastle.
3-0 to Newcastle. Yes. Sean, to end it on that is why I saved you two last. Well, this has been the Newcastle Fan Show. We will be back next Wednesday at the same time as we are every week, as is tradition, the Newcastle Fan Takeover. And we'll be talking about that game with Aston Villa, hoping that they come away with the 3 points on their Monday night travels, which is 14 games in a row. Quite astonishing there. But this has been the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.